We have another live show for you guys. We're coming back to New York City because I'm back in town. We put something together for May 15th. We're back at Sesh Comedy. Show starts at 7:30. Doors open at 7 p.m.
I'm so excited. We loved Sesh when we were there the last time. I'm pumped to be able to do another show back in New York so soon. So Wednesday, May 15th.
For tickets, head to our website at findingmrheight.com/live. That's findingmrheight.com/live. You can get your tickets right there.
That ticket link will be up as you are hearing this announcement.
And the venue is BYOB. So if you want a drink, bring a drink. If you like a Diet Coke, bring a Diet Coke. And we're going to hang out afterwards. We can say hello to everybody. Hope to see you all there.
See you there.
That's sort of what I felt after I like released all this information about it publicly is like, I don't know. It's like there's like a little bit of a shame in that, I think. And I guess that's why a lot of people don't talk about it too.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Finding Mr. Hype podcast. I am your co-host, Erica Spira.
And I'm Allie Jackson. Hello.
Hello, hello. And we, this week, do not have any official dating updates. No dates, anyway.
No dates.
I don't know. I'm just like, I'll get that out of the way up top. There was no dates that happened this week. I feel like we've been on fire with a lot of updates recently. So we have been.
I do have kind of like an out of left field juicy update though.
Oh, okay. Hit us. What's up?
Yeah. Okay. So I received a text in the middle of a work meeting, like an in-person work meeting, where I looked down, like my phone lit. I keep my phone on like do not disturb, right? But like I saw that something had popped up in my lock screen. I look down and it is Speed Racer.
Oh.
So quick reminder for the listeners, he's the one. So we went on two dates. The second one, like the first one was drinks, whatever. Second one was axe throwing. And then it was a moo. Like we texted a little bit after the axe throwing, but then neither of us asked to go out again.
Right. And this was also the man that did not get your number for a very long time and was only chatting in Bumble.
Correct. I had to actually, thank you for bringing this up. This is actually really relevant to the story. And I forgot about that. I had to be the one after our second date to say like, because he had taken pictures of us at axe throwing and videos of me, but like pictures of us, videos of me, whatever. And I had to be like, why don't we do this over text message? Like you have pictures. Like, I don't really like sending each other pictures in Bumble. Like, we should move to text, right? Man, I forgot about that and it makes the story better. Okay. So, yes, that's how it ended. And then we like went back and forth. He sent me the pictures in text after I prompted him to exchange numbers or whatever and went back and forth a little bit, but then that was it. So he texts me and I see it and it is. It takes up almost my entire phone screen length.
No paragraph?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I saw it and was like, oh my God, what is this? I'm like, I can't deal with this right now. I'm in this meeting. So after the meeting, I pull it up and it starts with, I was on TikTok the other day and I was like, oh man, which he knew about like the reason that he took the videos of me and then sent them to me is because he like knew about the account. However, he's not a big social media guy per his own admission. So he had said like, he's like, oh, like I'm not going to like look at it or listen or like whatever. I assume that everybody does though.
Yeah. I don't see how they don't take a browse.
He didn't, I guess, or maybe at least not like after we went out. Maybe he did when we were actively going out. But I guess my recap of our second date came up on his FYP.
Of the date with him specifically.
Correct. Which is actually I'm not even, it's really odd to me because not only was it so long ago, but also that video didn't do very well. So I'm like, I don't really know that it would be circulating FYPs. You might have sought this out on your own, but like whatever, it doesn't really matter.
Well, here's the weird thing with TikTok, right? One, people from your contacts naturally pop up. So if you added you as a contact, boom, there you go. Two,
well, my phone number is not attached to the, it's a different phone number that's attached to my TikTok.
Okay. But number two, I was going to say is there might be a weird thing that the TikTok knew that those photos and videos were in his freaking phone.
Oh, God.
That'd be some wild shit. But I'm just throwing it out there. Technology's crazy.
Oh, Jesus. They're like, hey, here's this video that was made from your videos.
Like, it truly, there might be some weird connection with that. Who knows?
Scary.
Who knows?
In any case. So he started with that. He said, like, your video came up. Your video recapping our second date came up. It made me smile. That was how he started. He's like, it made me smile. And I was like, where is this going? Like, I'm reading it being like, is this going to be like a, hey, how have you been type of text? Like a knock, knock, let's restart things type of text? Like, where is this going, right? It was not that. It was, in fact, an exit interview text. Like that book that we reviewed.
Whoa,
Have Met
what?
Hello.
Yeah, I would not have guessed that. I was going to be like, oh, he wants to go out again, for sure.
That's what I thought when I started the message, but no. It was, so, you know, we like reviewed that book that had the woman that talks about like interviewing dates after about why they didn't want to go out again. Yeah. It was that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did we talk about that in conjunction with his episode? Now I want to look it up and be like, so he went and listened to the episodes about him. And we mentioned exit interviews. That feels too coincidental for him to ask for one.
Yeah, maybe. Hold on. Now I'm going to look. Because it wasn't that. I feel like he was earlier than that, though. I feel like we had not done that yet. Let's see. In updates. No, that wasn't the episode he was on.
All right. Well, maybe he's binging the pod. He's a fan.
Maybe. Yeah. You know, maybe. Officially. So if so, hello, Speed Racer. So anyway, so he said that the reason it made him smile was because we seem to have had two different takeaways from our second date.
So remind me, what was your takeaway in the TikTok?
That I had fun.
Oh. Oh, okay. Sorry. We have two different takeaways. You said the date was very fun. And I don't know if we got the information. Wow.
So like literally, I ran to the video to be like, what the fuck did I say about this date? It was like maybe the most generic date recap I've ever given. Like it was like, I had a lot of fun. We talked about a lot of different things. Our conversations ranged across topics, whatever. I had fun. I'd like to see, like, I'd totally go out with him again is what I said.
Yeah. And then you made the move to be like, how about we get phone numbers? Chop, chop.
Yes. He said he didn't think I liked him and that.
Oh, what?
And that.
Is that really being like our recaps of the date are different? But sure. Okay.
He was like, I didn't really get the feeling that you liked me that much. I didn't really think you were asking me any questions. I feel like you like weren't that responsive on text message. And I was like, I'm sorry. I had to force us to text.
Yeah. We weren't even texting. What are you talking? Wow.
What are you talking about?
Also, didn't you kiss? Am I crazy?
Yeah, we did.
We
made out
at the end of that. First date and second.
Not first.
You made out after the second date and this man goes, yes. You know, I felt like you weren't really into me. Oh, liar. If you're listening right now, you're a liar.
And so, and then he said in the text, he said like, I don't know if you still have our conversation, which I do, but if you scroll up, you'll see. And then he like called out, he was like, I sent you the pictures, like, which this, and then you just like didn't really react. I'm like, dude, I had to ask why we were still talking in Bumble. I felt like you didn't even really want to be texting. I had to ask, like, I didn't think you were that into me either. So like, no harm, no foul. I'm not mad about it, but like, this is a lot.
Yeah. Or why didn't you ask me on another date if you were into it? This feels like a BS excuse. I'm sorry.
It does, but it also, why are we even talking? It's not like I asked him.
I don't.
It's been months.
Yeah, or like this whole interaction with him, I'm just like, it sounds like you need your ego stroked is what I'm taking away from it.
I don't know. I truly
like,
don't know.
What, you sent me the pictures and I wasn't like, oh my God, these are the best pictures I've ever gotten in my life. Thank you so much. If my move is like, hey, by the way, how about we text and get off this app? Probably trying to continue. I don't
know
what you would infer from that otherwise. And I made out with you.
I mean, so I guess maybe he like, I don't think it's true that I didn't ask him any questions, but that's his perception. So whatever. He doesn't like my conversation style. That's fine. But like, it just was so random.
This is very random because the whole point is just, Like, is it an exit interview or it feels like he's like, I want to say my side of the story?
The latter, probably.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. Well, it sounds like you feel like I gave you an exit interview through a TikTok and now you're like here rebuttaling things, being like, I don't know what I took from it was different.
It's just so interesting because like I actually thought when I read his text that I had said something negative about him in the video based on the text, right? Like
right.
Based on the text, I was like, shit, like what did I say about this guy? And I go back to the video and it's literally like, we had a lovely time. He's great.
So the one paragraph said all of this, all the feedback, yeah. All the, I went back to the Bumble messages. I felt like you didn't answer the picture. So everything you just shared was in one big message. Mm-hmm. So what did you say back to him? Did you say like, hey, I left that date being very interested in a second date. And I'm sorry, you know, that got misconstrued or like, what did you say?
I just said, thank you for the perspective.
Oh, so you gave him a polite fuck you. You can be corporate as you want, but that's a fuck off, man. Don't
I added a smiley face.
No, that's worse. I would want to smack you. I'm not gonna lie. I'd be like,
wanted to smack him.
Here's the thing though, I get it because you're publicly sharing it and he feels some type of way about it.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
I would flip it on him and just be like, hey, because I didn't hear from you, I assumed you weren't interested. I was interested in another date. But, you know, sorry if what I said hurt your feelings or whatever, but, you know, sounds like you don't want another one still. So
yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the thing is that, like, it honestly wasn't meant to be a fuck you. But like, I didn't really have any desire to, like, talk it out with him. Because he has his perception of how the date went. Mm-hmm. And I have mine. And they're different. And I don't want to go out with him again now. And doesn't sound like he does either. So I didn't really see a point in us like talking, I guess.
What's weird is it's like, I think you both left the date wanting another date. And now he's putting it on you being like, I didn't feel like you were into me enough. Even though you, you know, swap spit. So I don't know how much more.
Yeah.
Like, even I understand maybe through the date, maybe they feel like, I don't feel like they want me like in their personal space or something. And they're trying to like read your energy. But then at the end, if we're making out, pretty clear signal. Yeah. I don't know how I would respond. It would depend on how I was feeling about the whole thing. But and I almost feel like maybe I would call out like, I'm confused at what the point of this text is.
At the end of the text, he said, I just wanted to let you know there are two sides to every story, which like, I know that already.
I don't.
Because I also wonder, it actually makes me feel like he did not listen to the pod, because if all he has is that video, he could think that I was like, and then I didn't hear from him.
Yeah, I was like, is there an update at the end of the video or another one where you just go, oh, the update on Speed Racer is we both didn't reach out. I still don't see how what you did was anything negative. That's where I'm lost with him.
I don't think it was. And he didn't even really say it was negative. Like, he just, I think, and no is the answer to your question. I never did a video being like Speed Racer, but I said it on the pod, but it wasn't even a negative thing. It was like, I know I also did not reach out. Like, and I very well could have. That's not on that's not on him entirely. It's like 50-50.
Yeah.
Never said a bad thing about the dude.
It's just odd. I'm like, is he butthurt that you weren't after the date being like, I'm so into him.
And he actually, it's I'm so surprised that he never looked into any of my socials, because he actually heard about the pod way earlier than usual, because it happened to come up. You happened to come up because of your comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like 15 minutes into our date. First date.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I said in that moment, I do a dating podcast with her. So like, he knew about it from like the first date. So I'm just so surprised too that it's like so many months later.
Yeah, it's very odd. My whole question to him is like, I don't understand exactly what the point of the text is, because I didn't say anything bad about you. And also, you took videos of the date. You knew I was going to post that. So I felt I was as transparent as I could be.
He actually said in his text, because it's a really long text, obviously I didn't read all of it just now, but like, he said in his text that he's like, I don't mean this to be accusatory. Like, it's not about the fact that I did the video. Yeah. I think if I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, I think he thinks that he's doing me a favor by exit interviewing, by letting me know that if I thought I was like telegraphing interest, that I was not. I'm trying to put myself in his head, giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I guess. But like,
I still think it's dumb, but like,
I mean, you asked for his number and you made out with him. I was like, that's, I don't feel like that's a code.
I don't think so either, but so, here we are.
Yeah. That's just unfortunate. Damn.
Yeah. It just was like, I was already having like a really nuts day and I'm like, and now this, now I have a paragraph on my phone.
Right. It would be kind of funny if you were like, okay, you know, thanks for the feedback. If you would like any more feedback, let me know.
I could reciprocate.
You know, like Jesus.
Yeah. And, you know, it like actually got me thinking. I'd never talked about this publicly because I was just kind of like thinking about it just on my own. But like one of the reasons why I ultimately decided not to reach back out to him again is because I wasn't sure if like the romantic chemistry was building, right? And one of the reasons is because at axe throwing, I was trying to like establish some more like physical closeness, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, kind of sitting down next to him, like putting my hand, whatever. And I didn't really get the vibe that he was, despite the fact that we made out later that night, in those moments, like didn't get the vibe that he wanted to be close to me like that.
Yeah, this is all just very confusing.
Yeah, to the point where I was surprised when he kissed me at the end of the date because I was like, oh, I thought, oh, okay.
Right. And then you made out, so.
And then we made out.
This is just like frustrating to hear where it's just like, bro, I don't know. If, it also like feels like a lie. I'm like, why wouldn't you have said something sooner? Like, I just don't understand why it's coming from here.
Yeah. All sorts of weird. But so yeah, so no, I did not go on a date today, but or this week, but I did get feedback about dating.
Oh, okay. Well, some feedback for the books.
Yes.
Which is you need to, I don't know, be more clear in your likingness of people, even though it is at the end of the day, a second date with a stranger from the internet. So
I know. And you know, I was thinking about, that is something I do work on. I don't think that's the case in this scenario, but it is something I do work on. When we talked about when we did our dating in review or whatever, and I talked about the feedback I got, or no, it was when we did Have Him at Hello. And I talked about the feedback I gotten from my matchmaker about how like a couple guys had said I seemed guarded.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that I work on. But like, so it's like not like the most like out of left field thing, but I was just like, in this scenario, I just don't think it was true.
Yeah. Or, you know what? I was listening to something today and it was a guy talking about like, I can gauge how excited a girl is for the date, like before the date happens, even when it is like a stranger from an app. And even they admitted it's a little crazy that like someone from an app that we have never met, there's still me like feeling this, like, I don't feel like she's that excited to go out with me. And it's like kind of turning them off from the situation. When at the same time, it's like, well, but how excited are you to go out with me?
It's a stranger.
But it's all a two-way street. We've never met, especially when we've never met. I'm like, I don't expect someone to be like so ecstatic when they walk in the door that they're meeting me. That feels like a narcissistic's dream or something, you know? Like, I'm like, yeah, we're here to meet and like get to know each other.
And see.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, ugh, it just feels like a, overall, it feels like a male ego thing that it's like, oh, if I'm not hanging on your every word and like so excited and supportive about every freaking thing that you say when we have just met, I'm like, all right, well then I'm not the girl for you. Okay.
Well, that's ultimately what I came to, was like, all right, I guess my conversation style is not for him. I guess my texting style is not for him. That's fine.
Which is interesting because I remember the first day you saying you felt like you had great conversation and chemistry and were laughing and having a great time.
Yeah.
I don't see how you went into date number two not excited enough, you know?
And see, well, we were still talking on Bumble, so I don't know how excited I could be. So that's my update.
I actually have a little update to the trying to cheat scenario from last week.
Oof.
I mean, it's not huge, but a post came up from their Instagram, and it was a happy anniversary post, and had like whatever full amount of photos you could have to swipe through on an Instagram post, and the long caption and blah, blah, blah. And all I could think was just like, you know, sometimes they say the longer the caption, the more problems. Mm-hmm. Feels like that scenario where I was like, someone might be feeling a little guilty. But yeah, I just was like, ugh. To like see that and have that interaction with that person, I was like, you go. Like,
are you gonna like mute him or block him or something?
Oh yeah, I unfollowed him already. I was just like, oh yeah. Hell no.
No.
Like, I don't need this.
Yeah, no, you do not. But no, you do not.
Yeah. Or I don't know if this is a negative note to say or something, but it's like, yep, you know, all relationships are not what they seem. So when you're single and you see people posting and in love and blah, 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 you know what? It's not what it's all cracked up to be. Okay, being single is also pretty fucking great.
I think that's like a very positive takeaway that like, not obviously that's not a positive takeaway that this guy's cheating on his fiance, but or trying to.
No, not that part, but like, but yeah.
But I do think it's worth noting that nobody or very few people are posting to social media and being like, I had a fight with my partner today. My partner and I are not doing well. We are like, no one is doing that. Mm-hmm. And so it seems because of that, like everyone is in these like idyllic, happy relationships, and it's just not the case.
Yeah. A good friend of mine constantly reminds me of that, where she's like, girl, I always had boyfriends and they were always terrible. She's like, they were never good relationships. She's like, so, like, I look at you and she's like, I wish I was more like you and wouldn't, like, put up with this bullshit that I would put up with from people just because I wanted a boyfriend. So I'm like, yeah, there's always several ways you could look at something. Yeah, and I'm not saying anybody that has a, you know, relationship right now and posts their significant other. I'm not saying your relationship is bad either. Please. Don't.
No, of course not.
But, you know, yeah, it's all a highlight reel. It's all a highlight reel. But there are two sides to the story, Allie.
Okay. Thank you for the perspective, Erica.
Fuck you, Allie. All right.
Oh, my God. On that note, we actually have a rather serious topic this week.
Yeah, we have a great guest today, and we're just kind of goofing off over here. Anyway, we're continuing the fertility series, and we have Jordana Abraham coming on. She started her own podcast called Baby Steps, all about her own fertility journey and struggles with fertility as well. And we reached out to her to come be a guest for this topic, and we're looking forward to you guys all hearing our interview with Jordana.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat with her, and very topical for you since your egg retrieval was this week.
It was, so we timed it perfectly. So, everybody, enjoy.
Yeah, let's get to Jordana. So I've been talking a bunch about how I'm trying to order in less. And part of that is that I'm cooking at home more. But when I don't have time to cook, which is more often than not, I have really still been loving Factor's meals that are ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Yeah, and they have so many options too. Every week, their menu, they have 35 options that you can pick from. So you can find whatever it is that you're looking for. It's so easy. It's no fuss and no mess.
It's so great. And I've also been really enjoying their add-ons that they have. So they have breakfast. They have on-the-go lunches if you don't work from home. I've been ordering their snacks recently to have like a little pick-me-up in the afternoon. And I've really been enjoying that.
Yeah. And they also are celebrating Earth Day all month. You can look for their Earth Month Eats badge on their menu. And that will be meals that have the lowest carbon footprint. So shout out to Factor for that one.
It's pretty cool. So you can head to factormeals.com/FMH50 and use code FMH50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box.
That's code FMH50 at factormeals.com/FMH50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And we are back with Jordana. Hi, Jordana. Welcome back to Finding Mr. Hyde, the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me back. I guess I've been here before. So I had a great time last time, so I'm excited to be back talking about a slightly different topic.
Yeah, it was a perfect timing that you started your own podcast called Baby Steps, all about fertility journeys and your own journey going through IVF and different pregnancy things. So we appreciate you coming on for the topic.
Of course.
So I did save a personal update to do with you here, as you're also going through these things. Yeah. This past week was my official egg retrieval. So I'm officially done, which is very exciting.
Awesome. Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. kind of relieved to have it finished, done with.
Yeah.
On to the next thing.
How'd it go?
It went well. So I actually did get some like kind of scary news a little during the process because, you know, you go in every like couple days and then mine turned into then pretty much going in every morning for blood work and an ultrasound because my count of follicles was originally close to 20 and then all of a sudden they could only see 10. And then I was spending the week being like, do we know what number are we going to get? This and that. And my estimate was 12. And then I had a surprising news of after my procedure that they were able to get 21, which I was
awesome,
shocked and amazing. Did not believe they were my eggs.
Sometimes they have them like hiding behind other eggs. There's I've heard
I had
that.
Like a small cyst that enlarged, I guess, due to the meds. So that's what was like causing the blockage from seeing it. But they didn't want to, I guess, get my hopes up. They were like, we don't know if we'll get to it. But I came out of anesthesia and they said 21. And I said, are you sure those are mine? Because they told me 12.
Go back and check.
Did you take some from someone else? Right.
Yeah. I was like, can we double check that I was the correct room you're talking about?
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was relieved.
Very nice. Yeah. Because a lot of times it happens the other way. And this is way better, more, you know, exciting.
Right. So I was like, I felt relieved that I was like, okay. And then they ended up 17 were good to officially be put in storage. So I kind of just feel relieved that I don't feel like I have to face the decision of like, would I do another round? Was kind of what was on my mind going in. Like, okay, we'll do this round. We'll see. And of course, my mom was there with me. And being the nice Catholic Italian woman she is, she was saying the rosary before. And I knew, I was like, I'm going to say I got 21. And she's going to be like, you see, I was saying the rosary. That's exactly
that. You know what's really cool that I think my mom told me is that because you like form, you make all your eggs like while you're in utero, like your eggs have technically been inside your mom, which is like kind of crazy.
Oh, whoa.
Right?
It's like, yeah.
It's like, it sounds like a high thought, but it's kind of weird. It's like your eggs are like, have already been in your mom and your mom's eggs were like already in, I don't know. It's like all maternal linear.
Yeah, it feels like it's a win for her as much as a win for me.
She's like, we did it.
Yeah. And I will say this, I was pleasantly surprised with the shots. I don't know how you were reacting to the shots when you had to do your egg retrieval, but I surprisingly was like, these are really not bad.
Yeah. I thought it was like kind of empowering. Like once you get over the initial shock of like, should they be allowing me to do this? This doesn't feel like something I should be allowed to do. I think once you get over that phase of it where it feels like, I don't know, something's unnatural, then I feel like it becomes like really like once you get the hang of it, you're like, yeah, like keep going.
Once I got the hang of it, because I froze my eggs two years ago.
Oh, you did too. Okay.
And awesome. Yeah. And originally I was so anxious about, you know, I have to like mix the meds and I like fucked it up once and I wasted a whole thing. And like once I got past that, it was fine.
Exactly. The first like day or two, it's a little scary. And it's like, I think it's very nerve wracking because there's no one there to be like, okay, you did that right. So you're just kind of like, I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah. What's nice about the place I went to, shout out to Spring Fertility, they had me do a run through in front of them. And it wasn't actually with like real medication, but it was with the vials and the correct, you know,
that's really nice,
syringes and stuff like that. Oh, and nice. So she basically just showed me and then I did it. And she was like, oh yeah, there you go. You got the hang of it. And of course I was like, yeah, well, it's really easy to be confident when it's not like the thousands of dollars of medication I bought and it's your medication I could play with, you know? It's like, yeah,
that's cool that they let you do that though. That's, that's probably really helpful.
Yeah. And the one that you do in the pen, when they pulled it out, I immediately was like, oh, this is like my grandma's diabetes medication. And they were like, yeah, I guess similar. And I was just like, oh, all right. I was like, my grandma's half losing it, but she knows how to take her little medication in this pen. So I was like, all right, that one's going to be easy. That's
I can
bad.
Do this.
Yeah.
She can like, do can it. Do you it. Can do it. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I was like, oh, I dial to a little number. Pretty easy. For me personally, I found the most uncomfortable thing of the whole process was the ultrasounds having to do, because they really get up in there to go see the ovaries.
They're in there.
Anybody else feel that way?
There's a lot of them. They're like constant. Yeah.
But I was like, this is more painful to me than the shots and dealing with all that stuff. I was like, oh, if I have to go in for another ultrasound. And then I did. But we made it through.
Oh, we mine weren't that painful. I must have a wide set vagina. I was like, this feels fine.
Mine weren't bad until the end, because like by the end you're like uncomfortable and you're bloated, and I was just like, I just like don't want to be anywhere right now, and I think that was just like contributing to it.
No, I could see that. By the end you're like, all right, I'm a science experiment, like I've had enough.
So I guess to start, you've been through a lot of different things that have to do with fertility. I feel like you're somebody who now is officially kind of tried everything, right?
Yeah.
Like start, you were like, okay, I'm having trouble getting pregnant or staying pregnant. And then you move to like fertility drugs, right?
For
like
sure.
Shots. And then IVF, if I'm correct, right?
I actually like never really tried on my own, because I went off birth control and then I didn't get a period for like, I don't know, 3 months or something. So I was getting like a little concerned. So I saw a fertility doctor basically like before I even was like really trying, just to find out why I wasn't getting a period. And then she figured out that I had PCOS, which is, so it kind of just makes it very difficult when you have PCOS to figure out when you're ovulating, because those like sticks that you be on tell you if you're ovulating, like they don't really work, or they tell you it like too many times or something. It was like positive too many times. So it was to get around that, they can give you like a shot, which just basically like forces you to ovulate. And that was the first thing I did, which worked pretty well. I got pregnant the first time I did that. But then after that, like after I miscarried, I was trying for a few months, and then I just decided to do IVF just to like take the pressure of the timeline more off of it.
In your intro episode for Baby Steps, I really appreciated how you were talking about that timeline and kind of that pressure that you felt of feeling behind and feeling like, you know, this was really weighing on you. And I think that's something that a lot of our listeners can relate to.
Oh, totally. I mean, I think that was like the most distressing part of it, was just this feeling of like, I'm going to be like alone in all of this, and like everyone's like, I'm watching everyone in real time just like move past me. And like, it felt like, I mean, I, and you know, the further I get away from that, the more I can see like how unimportant that is. Although it's still like, there's still a little bit part of me like in the back of my brain that feels that way, even though like rationally I'm like, who cares if, you know, you have kids a few years later than everyone else, like no one cares but you. So but like getting over that was definitely helpful for my like day-to-day happiness, I think, getting over that idea that I had to be on the same time as everyone else.
Yeah. And also, you know, starting your podcast, I heard you talk about like when you go through these things, if you don't know someone personally who's close to you who has also gone through these things, it can just feel even more isolating and more alone, specifically with going through a miscarriage. Because I feel like people in general have been a lot more open about those sorts of things like in recent years. So I can imagine when you went through that, it really felt like, how do I even share this with people, especially if the people that you would first look to are people that just had children?
Right. Yeah. I think it was like, I think that kind of looking back at that again, it kind of showed like how naive I was about the whole process. Cause like, I was like 6 weeks pregnant. I told everyone. Cause I don't know. I just didn't anticipate having any, none of my friends had had them. My mom has 8 children. So I was like, all right, like this isn't like a thing that I'm going to have to deal with. And I think I was just like very naive, and I told everyone, and I was making like all these plans, and I was like, it kind of feels like, you know, and to relate it to dating, because it did feel like that. It feels like, you know, when you're like younger and you start seeing a guy and you think it's going to be like forever, and you tell everyone, and then like the next week he breaks up with you. Ends it with you because you weren't actually even dating. So it's like that, you know, you look back on that, I'm like, okay, like I probably got a little bit ahead of myself there. And then, yeah, it felt very isolating because it wasn't even like anyone else that I, you know, at least when you go through a breakup, there's someone else who can probably relate. And I didn't really have anyone in my life at that time. I mean, since then I have had more people that I've seen and known and and spoken to about this that have gone through that. But at the time it just felt very unexpected, which I think was what made it so painful, or a big part of what made it so painful.
I've really appreciated how much more people have been talking about it. And I remember a good friend of mine had a miscarriage, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. And her OBGYN said to her, oh yeah, it's just your run-of-the-mill miscarriage. And she was like, what? I'm sorry. Wow. What? I didn't know there was such a thing. And it was so matter of fact, because it just is so common, but because right. It just hasn't been out in the public sphere, people just don't know that.
Yeah. I think it's the kind of thing that's not really talked about. Just a lot of when people are trying for a while, they don't really talk about it, or they talk about it once they have the baby, which yes. is sort of why I started Baby Steps, because I felt only things I saw were people sharing once they had the success. And then you kind of have mixed feelings about that, where you're okay, that's in some ways it's encouraging, because it's great. They've been trying, other people, it can be really hard. And then one day it works and it's there. But it's also kind of well, of course you can say that. You had the success. It's so I kind of didn't really see that many people who were posting who were in it, who were fully going through it. And I think that was what, when I did on rare occasion see that was what actually made me feel, I think, a little bit less alone in it.
Yeah. I mean, to relate it back to dating, like you did before, mm-hmm. it's when people are they're married and they're it'll happen when you least expect it. And you're well, that's Ugh. Easy for you to say, because you're married right. now.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not particularly helpful. Yeah. Yeah. And even with Baby Steps, now that I put it out there, I get a lot of DMs from people with a lot of unsolicited advice, which I find to also sort of when your married friend gives you advice, oh, it's gosh. I didn't really ask you. So,
in fact, I didn't ask you at all.
Yeah. Well, it's,
I wasn't interviewing. Of, right.
Well, yeah. That's the other part about Baby Steps that I really wanted to do, because when you see these success stories, you see a very abridged version. Even when someone's had an issue, you see a very abridged version of it. And so I wanted the full story. I wanted the full details of the story to because I think that's more relatable. People usually gloss over the whole thing and say you had issues and then it was fine. But if you get the real breakdown, there's so many things that you have to do, the little details of all of it. That I think really make a real story that you can't really see on social media, because it's just not a medium where you have time to see the full beginning to end story.
Yeah. And I haven't gone through any pregnancy stuff yet, but when I was diagnosed with herpes, that's exactly how I felt. I was the doctor immediately was yeah, this is, everybody's got this. I see this all the time. And all I could think was, I don't know one person that has this.
Right.
Of all the people I know, not one person has ever said they have this thing. And then when I found other people and joined this group, and I just found other people, but specifically that were single and also had this, I found it so much of a relief, because anyone I found that would publicly speak about it was in a relationship and on the other side.
Right.
And it same thing. It felt like, oh yeah, now you're cool. Now you don't have any shame. And it's what about all those things you were going through that the rest of us are going through, that are struggling with disclosing to people and all these other things?
Yeah. It's a totally different beast when you're going through something and you're currently in it and you haven't solved the issue. I think it's a lot more, it's a lot tougher. It's a lot more to be a lot more vulnerable. And, I think it's just a scarier thing to put out there, just your story, when you don't have it figured out yet. It's just scarier.
Yeah, I actually was curious, when you were public about it, did you have anyone come forward that you did personally know now reveal to you that they also have been through those things?
Yeah, I definitely had that from Baby Steps, from... you know, just even talking about it on You Up paywall episodes and things like that. I had a lot of people tell me about struggles that they had. And, you know, what was really interesting is I had seen a lot of men tell me about that. You know, that the kids that they had, that they had 2-3 miscarriages before they had them. And that's not something I'd ever heard a man discuss like me before ever. And I think I had Erin Andrews on the podcast, and she was, you know, she works with like all these football players and like people in sports, very male dominated. And she was saying like, when she went through it, like, that was also something that was really different from about her experience, and kind of great, because there really aren't many outlets for men to like talk about anything like that, I think. So they got kind of sort of like forgotten about in the whole process. But I thought that was really cool that she had that kind of experience.
Yeah. One thing I even caught was in the episode, you talked about how like you had a doctor almost advise you to like not share too much with your husband.
Yeah.
Like too much details, almost like, well, don't take the romance out of this. And you're sitting there like, but like, this is a hard thing that I'm going through as well. So I was curious, like through this process, have there been moments that you felt like you either struggled to share things with your husband, or then suddenly felt like you were in your own head and holding back information?
Mm-hmm. I felt like, or I feel like, I mean, I'm still in it. I feel like I've told him about all my feelings surrounding it. When it comes to the actual process, I just don't really think he understands like the nuances of like the woman, of like how it all works, to be totally honest. I mean, he'll try, but it's just not, and it's not happening to him. I've found it much more relatable to talk to other women going through it. I think there's just something about like, you know, understanding the process of it happening in your body to your body that just is different. And he's, you know, he's very supportive, and he's, but he also doesn't understand, like, I think he doesn't have the same sense of like the time pressure that I do, or feel like he's very much like, which is nice in some ways. It's really nice because he's like, there's no like pressure, like, when are you going to give me a baby? Or something like horrible like that. There's no like sense of like, what's the holdup? Like, why can't we figure this out? It's very much like, it'll happen when it happens. Like, he's in no rush. In fact, the first time I got pregnant, I think he was like a little early for him. I think he like wasn't fully ready. I mean, at this point he is, but I think he just doesn't, maybe it's being a man, maybe it's like just being, you know, the same age as me. So it just feels different, I think, for him. He's like, it'll happen eventually. He feels very confident in that. And I don't think he just gets like the sense of urgency that I have.
Yeah. Or sometimes I feel like maybe they're embarrassed to ask questions if they truly are like at level one of just female anatomy. Right. like my friend, this actually just happened. My friend went to a gyno and was looking into IVF because her company, you know, covers it and stuff. And at the end, you know, they talk through everything and the doctor says, so do you guys have any questions? And her husband was with her, and her husband just goes, yeah, so like, what is a period? And she was like mortified, like, oh my God, could you ask me and not like start at level one with the doctor? But the guy was just like, you know, like, no one gives us a chance to really ask these questions and find out. And so we're kind of just left in the dark. And then you're just like, well, I finally have a doctor in front of me. Like, let me figure it out.
You know? I think it's like a weird position to be in as a man, because you can't really like do that much. Like, you can provide the sperm, and then that's sort of your job here is kind of done when it comes to like assisted fertility or natural birth. It's kind of like, once you know what I mean, I've said that to him. I'm like, you could die and I could have this baby like without you. Like, you're like, there's just no, like, there's just like, I'm doing literally all the work. Like, you could literally die and everything would move forward as planned. Which always makes someone feel really good. No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's only so much he can do, and there's only so much that he can understand. And I, you know, I say that as a joke, but like, and it's not their fault, but I think that that's sort of where men get a little lost in this, is like, they can't really like physically do any of the work there for you. They can't take the shots for you. They can't carry the baby for you. Like, there's really, all they can do is like be supportive to the extent that they can and know how. And, you know, I appreciate that, but it is frustrating. Like, just because it's a biological thing doesn't mean it's not annoying. Like, I said to him, well, I think once he said he like, I was complaining about something, and then he like misunderstood it, and he asked me some question that like I had already answered the next day. I don't even remember what it was. And I was like, oh my God. I like freaked out at him. And I was like, and he's like, I'm sorry. I didn't know what that meant. I'm like, well, why don't you fucking Google it? So like, it can, you know what I mean? That it can get like, tense, even when there's no, again, it's not like anyone's fault. I think that one person would know more about the whole process or the whole situation just by nature of it happening within their own body.
Yeah. God, I remember in high school biology, we learned about both, you know, reproductive systems, and we had like diagrams we had to label. And I studied with my guy friend, and I was like, all right, I go, well, clearly, you know, your stuff and I know my stuff. So let's switch papers. You label the female stuff, I'll label the male stuff, and we'll check each other's work. And I label it, and then I look over. He hasn't labeled one fucking thing. He was just so lost and overwhelmed. And he was like, this is a lot. This is a, you guys got 20 different labels.
A lot of parts.
Like four things.
So many parts.
So many parts. I was like, well, thank God you're studying with a woman then. You know, I got to really walk you through this.
I really appreciated how you talked about that relationship with your body. Like you're saying that like it's tough for your husband to understand because it's happening in your body. And you talked about like the relationship of your body being like any other relationship that you have,
right?
And feeling frustrated. And I just thought that was just really powerful.
Oh, thank you. I mean, like it was, it's kind of like a new relationship with your body. And I've always had like in my mind, like a pretty good relationship with my body, generally speaking. Like we all have our days, but generally like I've, you know, I felt like we've worked well together and like we've done, you know, we're like a, you know, we get along. And then this whole thing happens and I'm like, why won't you just like do what I want you to do? Like, just do it. Like,
do the thing.
Yeah. And it's kind of feels like you're like your mind and your body are a little bit at war, which is, I'm sure, things people who aren't even having kids struggle with a lot of the times when it comes to body image and you know, body love and all that stuff. But like for me, that was also something that was new. I was like, this is the first time that I feel like I am not, we are not like in sync. You're not doing what I am telling you to do. And like, you're keep letting me down. And it's sort of like, it feels like you're almost practicing for having a child because you're like, what do I do when like you are not listening to me? What do I do when I'm like angry with you, when we don't feel like we're getting along? Like, do I punish you? Do I like just continue to like medicate you? Do I like make you just go through the ringer of all this like hormonal shit? Do I give you a break? I don't really know. It almost does feel like in some ways, like I'm parenting my own self, my own body. It's like a very weird thing to feel.
Yeah, I was curious, and this comes from kind of my own like lens of kind of this balance of like, I don't know if you feel like on the like masculine versus feminine energy level, you like lean more towards masculine, but like I feel like I lean more towards masculine, right? Even in like my personal style, like I don't typically love a dress and things like that. But like with going through this, I'm curious, do you at all almost feel like a little bit disconnected to your like femininity and frustrated in that sense?
Yeah. I think that's actually like a really big part of it that I haven't heard mentioned really before, which is a really good question. I think there's something that feels like particularly shitty about failing in this every time you fail, because it feels like, you know, like you're a woman, like this is what you're supposed to do. Like this is a big part of this is like biologically why you're here, is to like create more. And it almost like makes you think back to biology class, like if I can't, and the things that don't reproduce just die out. So it's like, it does feel like almost like an existential thing where you're like, am I a woman if I can't make a baby, if I don't have one of those cute little pregnancy like bump things, if I'm not like a mother, like what am, who, like is that, am I less of a woman? Do I feel like I've failed, like almost on like a human level? Is like a kind of a part of it that I don't think anyone really talks about. I think that's maybe like kind of the embarrassing part. Like it feels a little embarrassing, I think, to like public. And I think that's sort of what I felt after I like released all this information about it publicly, is like, I don't know, it's like there's like a little bit of a shame in that, I think. And I guess that's why a lot of people don't talk about it too.
Yeah. And like from a personal lens, it's like, if I was to be in your shoes, there would be this part of me almost feeling like, oh, this is almost the thing I felt like people were always telling me. Like I wasn't nurturing enough. I wasn't this enough. I wasn't soft enough. But like mm-hmm. maybe if I was more of those things, like then it would be somehow easier for me, which definitely is not true. But it almost right. feels like, oh, like, thank God you're more this like career woman and like direct and blah, 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 and all those other personality things where, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to put this idea in your head, but like, I was thinking of it through my own lens of just like, God, I would feel like, oh, of course. And like, feel this right. thing where people are looking at me like, well, you know, you really aren't the nurturing motherly type or whatever bullshit, you know,
which it's funny. Believe, yeah, no, I think it's fine. That's crossed my mind in some ways in terms of like, you know, I did that Reiki thing.
Like, yeah, which is I was very intrigued by because I'm so not a woo-woo person either.
I'm really not. I enjoyed doing it. But like, I don't know if I believe it. I'm kind of like, we'll see. Like, we'll see if it works. I don't know.
I watched someone do Reiki when my dad was sick. He did Reiki and I like watched it and it was like, well, this is interesting.
Yeah, it's different. It's kind of like, it can't hurt. A lot of this stuff that I like throwing everything at the wall, I'm kind of like, it's not, why not? Hurting. Like, we'll see. And I think for a while, it did give me kind of like a better outlook on it, a better, like more positive feeling around it. But one of the things she did tell me was like the feminine, like you should be like receiving more. Like it's more masculine to like chase stuff and it's more like feminine to just like receive shit, which sounds like nice. I'm like, do I go to a spa? Is that what this means? I don't really know. It's kind of like not my energy. I agree. Like my energy is not like just things come to me. It's like I go get things.
I feel the same way,
you know, and that's part of like part of my initial thought around this was like, I'm just gonna like, like double down and like, just like knuckle through this and just get, cause that works in a lot of other ways. It works in a lot of other ways in my life.
Yeah. I have a few friends who've struggled with infertility and they're similarly to what we're saying, like go-getters, like career women, like they, you know, they, if there's a problem, they're going to solve it. And they're like, this is the first problem I've ever come up against that I couldn't just solve. And like, if I tried,
really nothing you could do.
like they're like, I just couldn't. And it was the first time that it ever happened.
Yeah. And that's sort of the frustrating thing about the like, it'll happen when you like relax kind of thing. It's like, you're kind of in the back of your head. I'm like, maybe it will. But like, what if I'm not the kind of person who can relax? Like, what if I never relax? Then, yeah. Like that's not relaxing to feel like I have to relax. It's like, I don't really know how to get to that point.
Yeah. It's the classic tale of, you know, people start looking into adoption and they kind of accept the fate that like, okay, I just won't have biological kids. All right. On to the next thing. And then the minute they're adopting, they get pregnant.
Right. Well, I mean, I can tell you that those people are, I think that there's a level of like lying in there too, where it's like, no, I think that's like, it's like, I've had months when I've taken a break and I've tried naturally and you're like, you're never like, you're always like in the back of your head every time you have sex, you're like, maybe I'm pregnant.
Maybe.
Like you're never like fully like, I've completely lost all, you know, I'm not trying at all. Like I think very few people are like not even thinking it in the back of their head. It's like an oversimplification, but people do tell those stories and they are extremely annoying. So
on the note of people like having gone through the journeys, you know, et cetera, you've mentioned the people that talk about their fertility journeys now on the other side of it and they have kids. Mm-hmm. What about hearing from people who have been through infertility struggles and didn't end up having kids?
Right.
Like how do those stories land with you?
You know, I find it encouraging that I really can't find that many people with that issue, if I'm being totally honest. I do think if you're like, and maybe they're just not public about it. It's possible that I just haven't heard from them. I've heard from some people with like secondary infertility that are more talking about it and going through it. I haven't really heard of anyone personally that is like, I think been trying for a really long time and just never ever, which is encouraging, I think, in some ways, because,
yeah,
you know, and I do think at the end of the day, like, if you are open to every option available eventually with enough time and money, to be honest, like, you can have a child in some way, shape, or form. I haven't heard many examples of people who just, like, it never happened, it's over, and, like, and again, maybe they're still at it, so, and they're quiet about it. It's possible.
I was going to ask you, like, if you could go back from when you started and you decided, like, okay, I think I'm ready to be pregnant, I'm ready to have kids, and started the whole journey, what do you think you would say to yourself back then?
Right. Well, I would say, tell less people. No, I mean, I wanted to, here's the thing. I say that as kind of a joke, because I think I would have, everyone I told is someone that I would want to know that I had miscarried. Right. Like, I have, like, I told, right, like, my good friends, and, like, I don't think I would have kept, maybe I would, really, it's really, I would have told them eventually, but I think it's more this feeling of, like, you kind of have to tell them, like, pretty quickly. Because, like, they think you're pregnant, and, like, that's awkward. They think you're pregnant. So it's more like you kind of take away the ability to tell people things when you want to tell them. You kind of, like, time is, like, you can't be, like, 3 months later, I'll tell you that I'm not pregnant, because that's going to get weird. So, so maybe, like, be a little bit more thoughtful about who I was telling or when I was telling. And then I think, like, I mean, it's weird. I do think this whole thing has taught me a lot about patience, a lot about, like, acceptance, a lot about learning to be uncomfortable. So I don't, you know, I'm not going to say, like, I enjoy it, or that it's, that I feel like it's, like, so amazing for me, because there's been very low moments for me. But I do feel like the process has changed me in some form of a good way.
Yeah, I loved the resiliency theme that you were talking to your sister about in the intro to Baby Steps, and about how much this process has built that resiliency for you in this particular aspect.
Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, I feel very, like, lucky that it took me until the age of, like, 33 to feel like things just were not working out for me. Like, I think a lot of people experience that a lot younger. And, you know, I didn't really, I mean, I think I've, you know, on a empathic level, you kind of know what that feels like, but until you, like, go through it and you can't really change, you having this sort of issue and you can't change your circumstance. And, it feels like everyone around you is just, like, luckier than you. I don't think you can fully understand it. So, in some ways, it's, like, it's really good for building resiliency, I think. It's, like, it's definitely made me a lot more of a compassionate person. And, like, I think I understand people not just going through this struggle, but going through any struggle where it's, like, you're just not dealt the good cards on this particular issue, whether it's, you know, I mean, like, dating, I've had my own issues with, obviously, like, I have the dating podcast, but, like, any kind of other thing, like, any chronic illness, any kind of, like, thing that people have where it just kind of feels like you just drew a bad card. It feels like you're just really unlucky, and what that's like. And I think that that's, like, an important thing to have in life, and it's probably an important thing to have as a parent. So I'm hoping that, you know, helps prep me.
Yeah. And something I've heard you talk about in your podcast too is, like, how a lot of times women have, like, a fantasy in their head about being pregnant at, like, the same time as their friends, and, like, mm-hmm. we're both gonna go for a walk in the stroller, and there's also kind of this sense of, like, community sometimes where, like, nice, and we can help each other out, like, we both have babies, we won't just be, like, home by yourself with the baby, we can come over. So I feel like that also kind of feeds into everything you're saying, as, you know, one of, like, the frustrating parts is it's like, yeah, how great would that be, but kind of trying to accept, like, that is also okay if that's not how it works out for you and your timeline. But right. I imagine that's frustrating on, like, a few different levels, especially if you're struggling with fertility. Like, do you find it almost kind of harder to talk to your friends that are, like, having kids right now about these things when they come up?
I feel like it's nice to feel like you have people who are, like, rooting for you. So in that way, it's good, but it has its own struggles. I think when you don't fully get it, sometimes you'll say a comment that like is actually not really helpful and actually very annoying or actually like kind of triggering, or, you know, they're like, I think there's sometimes things where, you know, you are the last to notice because that someone's pregnant because they don't want to like upset you. But then it's like more upset that it's more upsetting that you like think I can't handle this. And now you're like, hide, like you feel bad for me. That feel it's like that's more upsetting than feeling like I'd rather you tell me with everyone else and not like, you know, make me into this person that I don't want to be. And it doesn't mean that I won't be like immediately like jealous when I hear it. But like, I'll get over that.
And you were going to feel that way regardless of when you found out.
Right. Exactly. So it's like, I guess it's for them. They just don't like, they feel it's not, I understand why I'm not the first person you want to tell, because like, I'm not the person that's going to be the happiest for you. I'm like eventually going to get there. But my immediate reaction is going to be like a little bit like a gut punch. I'm going to feel extremely jealous. And then an hour and a half later, I will feel very happy for you. So I understand why I'm not like, oh my God, like, who can I tell first? It like wouldn't be me. But I also don't like being last. So, you know.
Yeah, it's a hard jealousy lesson. It's like jealousy is a real emotion that we all experience. But we always act like it's this horrible, terrible thing. When, you know, you would hope like, well, the people I'm closest to, I hope would like understand. And like you said, you're like, yeah, I am a little jealous. I'm also happy for you at the same time. Like I can exist in the world that like both are true, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that's the whole thing about, I mean, all this stuff comes with so many different emotions and so many different days that it's almost hard to like figure out how I'm doing. It's like some days I'm doing really well and I'm like, oh, amazing. Like I'm sleeping till 10:30. Like I don't, I'm doing literally whatever I want to do all the time. And, you know, my friends who are hungover are like having to take care of their babies and there's, or, you know, stay at a friend's house and their baby's like crying in the middle of the night. And you feel like, okay, like this is not a big deal. Like I'm like, you know, it doesn't look so amazing over there to everyone all the time anyway. And then there's other days when you're like on social media and you see like all these like things and these happy families and you feel like really shitty. So it's very much like, I would say most days are good. And some days are like really bad. Kind of like anything else, I assume people are dealing with.
Yeah, a few people wrote in asking how you kind of approach everyday life going through things like this. Like someone said, it feels like the joy is sucked out of everything else.
Right.
And I'm curious kind of like what if that's.
I think at first it felt like that. When I like first miscarried, it felt like, oh, okay, I cannot be happy until I have a baby. Like we've got to just like do this immediately, like as soon as humanly possible, because like I am fucking miserable. It's kind of, and then you're like, you know, oh, I can drink again. But like, you're like, it's like kind of like when you know, you break up with a guy and then you're at the bar and you're like, I don't really want to be here, but like here I am. You're like crying at the bar. Like I don't really want to be drinking, but like, you're right. Like I should, because like I'm not pregnant anymore. And I think that like eventually I got to a state and it's not like linear. So it's not, again, it's not like every day, but I think I got to a state where I was like, I don't know how long this is going to take. Like it's taking a lot longer than I thought it was going to take. And I cannot, like, I refuse to just waste years of my life being completely miserable until I get there, because like, it could be like many years. Like I have no idea how long it's going to take. And I don't want to look back and feel like I literally threw away years of my life that I could be enjoying, like, again, doing whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it, and traveling and, you know, staying out and just doing fun stuff, like really focusing on my career, all that stuff. I don't want to look back and say like those years were just spent devastated, and because I think one of your questions that I saw, which was like, why do you like talking to people who don't have kids, who don't want kids?
Yeah.
And one of those things is that they remind me that like you can have a really full, amazing life without children. And again, it's not that I don't want children, but it's sort of like when you're so narrowly focused on hitting this goal, you're sort of like, there are plenty of people out there who like have really great like lovely lives who don't have kids and they're very happy. And so I think when I hear about those people and I hear their reasons why they don't want kids and they're always like, oh, I don't want to, like, is it insensitive for me to tell? I'm like, no, like, tell me more. Like, I'm here. It's like I'm hearing, like, you know, the amazing stories of a single person. You're like, you know, it's like that's it's like it reminds you that, like, things are not that bad. Like, there's plenty of people who don't even want this. So I think it takes, like, the edge off a little bit. I actually really enjoy it.
Yeah, I like, really appreciated that perspective. Home. And yeah, I really appreciated that perspective in the interview that you did with your sister about hearing from people who are intentionally child free and what that's like. So I'm not sure if I want kids. And kind of like you guys were saying about the, like, does that take you, like, does the infertility make you, like, question your femininity? I think, mm-hmm. like, I've heard people who talk, women specifically, who talk about not wanting kids, and they've had that judgment put on them as well of, like, well, if you don't want to be a mother, then, like, what are you even doing?
Right. Yeah. And I think that that's, like, again, like, I think that judgment maybe is something that I used to have more, or, like, even, you know, even if consciously or unconsciously, but I think finding, like, the merits in that position is just something that makes you, like, a person who understands people more too. Like, what, that there's not just one choice for everyone. There's not just, like, one path that makes people happy, that people can find fulfillment in all sorts of different lifestyles. And I think that, like, I had never really thought about that before. And again, I still, like, very much want kids, but I think that, being able to, like, understand why someone would not is just a very healthy perspective to have also.
It's like, not everyone's goal is to get married.
That too. Yeah. And you don't, because it can seem like crazy to someone who really wants it. But then I think when you, like, that makes you a better person too, is understanding that, like, not everyone wants the same things in any path of life, career, like, family, you know, relationships. Like, there's not just one size fits all to everyone. And that makes you feel like, also, I can get to this finish line in my own time too, because it's like, not everyone feels like they need to do this immediately.
Yeah. I liked, I think your sister posed you the question being like, if there's a crystal ball that said you will have a kid and you're going to have it at this age, like, say 37 or something, that's just older than you are now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how would
there
you
is
feel?
A crystal
like,
ball. I saw a Reiki person. I'm just kidding. yeah,
yeah, it's, I think, like, if someone said you will get married, it's just going to be later than you thought. You will have a kid. It's just going to be later than you thought. We all would relax. We'd all be like, oh, okay. Yeah. So it is going
to
happen.
Let me have fun. Right. Yeah. And I think about that when it comes to, like, being married and dating. I'm like, if I had known I was going to meet my husband when I did, I would have just, like, enjoyed dating. I would have, like, had a lot more fun. I would have just, like, been a lot more relaxed about the whole thing and probably, like, just had a way better time.
Yeah. I look at my young 20s as that, where you're just like, what is it? We're all young. It's not serious. We're having fun. And then all of a sudden, like, a certain age hit, and all of a sudden I was like, okay, the fun method has not worked. And maybe you should take it more seriously.
We're like, are we still having fun? Is everyone?
Yeah. Well, like, all of a sudden I was like, oh, my age now feels like, now it's on the forefront of my mind. Funny, I was curious, you know, going through things like this too, do you feel like any of your perspective on, like, what you should look for in a partner, like, and who you choose to marry or be with, has, like, it all shifted? Like, do you feel like there are new things now you would put at, like, the top of your list after going through things like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to be there with someone who, both for yourself and to find a partner who, it's very easy to support someone when they're having a bad day. But it's harder to support someone when they're having a bad year, I think. Mm-hmm. That's like a lot, that's a lot more difficult. And, like, I think that that's something, you know, that I'm really grateful that my husband has, you know, he knows sometimes I'm like, I'm really down, and it's not just like a day, it's like a week, it's a month. It's like, you know, this whole process is like so many ups and downs, and it's nice to have, like, a very steady, supportive presence who doesn't, you know, get frustrated, also doesn't put any pressure on me for this kind of situation. Obviously, again, there's like other, there's always like something that someone could be doing. I would say like it'd be very rare to get through this whole thing without any fighting at all. But in general, I think it's just someone who's like supportive and someone who's like really steady is like, has been really great to have someone who's just like really like a rock. Like when you say a rock, it just means like they're not, you know, they're not going anywhere and they're always going to be there and they're like supporting, but not like pressuring, I think has been really nice. And I, you know, I appreciate him because again, he doesn't really feel like the urgency that I do. He's very much like, I know it'll happen. I'm not like that concerned, but he still like understands that I don't feel the same way. Like that it does, that it is a different experience for me than like, it'll happen eventually. Like
that is the number one thing I feel like I hear anybody in any type of speech or thank you to their spouse is they usually always say like, they were my rock. They were with me through a long period of time that wasn't great. And I think sometimes we all sit there and it's sad to say we're almost like surprised a little bit, but it's like you're pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
You know, because especially early dating, like you have that bad day, there's this voice in your head and you're like, okay, but you can't be like bad day girl all the time. No one wants right. to date the person that's, you know, in a bad mood every time they see, you know, like it's kind of at the forefront of your mind. So it's very nice to hear that he's been great with you through the whole thing.
Yeah. And it's been like, you know, it makes you, it does make you, I think, closer and stronger to feel like you're going through something with someone, even if you do sometimes feel like you're taking the brunt of it. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, it also sounds like, I know you talked about how this has made you have more empathy for people going through things or like kind of put yourself in other people's shoes. It sounds like that's an important trait for your partner to have, is that like they're not going to be able to understand what's going on with your body, but being able to support you in something that they don't even fully understand.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think it's kind of like, well, it's very hard, I think, for a lot of partners who are not going through it, because you're like, I can't fix this. I can't like do it myself. And so I don't really know like where my place is here. And I think that's something we've learned from, you know, going through it, is it's nice to be asked, how would you like me to support you right now? Mm. How would you, you know, what's the best, what's, because it's not always the way you think it is, you know, it's not always like asked. For me, it was like, sometimes it's like, I want you to like learn more about this so that I am not the only one who knows the language that this person is like speaking about. And sometimes it's like, I just want you to listen to me like rant and like be really pissed off. And sometimes it's like, I just want you to like go away. So and I think, you know,
go golfing, just get out of the house,
right? To just get out of here and like leave me alone and not mm-hmm. tell me it's going to be fine. Because I think that, you know, they want to say like it's going to work out, it's going to be fine, but it's like, how do you know? I don't know, like it's sort of what you and so sometimes that's not what you want to hear.
Yeah, I get that.
Oh, I get that. That line usually drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Right. Is it
the how do you know thing? Yeah, right. How do you know? You don't know.
Right.
Or like, oh, specifically, I had a friend. She met her now fiance, and I think she was like 30. And I'll never forget, like, I turned 30 and I was like catching up with her about dating. And she was just like, I'm telling you, Erica, it happens when you turn 30. You're going to meet your person this year. Oh, and then I'll never forget the next year, 31. She was like, it happens when you're 31.
If you just believe,
she just kept moving the goalposts. And I'm like, all right, Kristen, now I'm 32. So
oh my God.
Like, she's like, it's going to happen when you're 32. And I was like, stop putting a number on it. Like, make it worse.
Right. Just stop counting, please.
Stop counting. Stop counting.
Yeah, I think this is amazing.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. This was awesome. And if you haven't checked out Baby Steps yet, go check out Jordana's new podcast. And you also interview people from all different walks of life. One of my favorite episodes was the points guy.
That was an awesome one.
We've got dads on here. Yeah, we've got single dads on the episode too. And I love that story. That was great. And single moms. We had Amanda Freeman. She also had a really interesting story.
Yeah. So thank you again so much for coming on. We always love having you. And everybody else listening, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks, Jordana. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
This is the place. where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.